There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. Once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
You're about to take a deep dive into one of the biggest true crime cases in the universe. Or, at least, on our part of the planet. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
In a quiet room in Los Angeles, filled with the sound of cameras clicking and reporters murmuring, Thalia Graves stood at a podium. The tension in the air was almost palpable, the kind that makes every breath feel heavy. This was no ordinary press conference. For Graves, it was a moment of reckoning, one she had waited over 2 decades for. Her voice trembled as she began to speak, tears welling in her eyes. The words she delivered told a story of unimaginable pain and betrayal, words that would reverberate far beyond the four walls of the press room that morning. Graves spoke not just for herself, but for the countless women who had been silenced for too long. "The trauma of the assault has taken a toll on my mental health," she said, her voice catching. "I have PTSD, depression, and anxiety. I am emotionally scarred. It has been hard for me to trust others, form healthy relationships, or feel safe in my own skin." Graves had spent years carrying the weight of what she claimed happened to her in 2001, and she was no longer willing to remain silent. That morning, she stood beside her lawyer, Gloria Allred, a woman who has become synonymous with high-profile cases of sexual violence and who is now guiding Graves in her pursuit of justice. For Thalia Graves, this moment was long overdue. Her lawsuit, filed just that week in the Southern District of New York, named Sean Diddy Combs, one of the most powerful figures in the music industry, as her assailant. Graves' accusation added to a growing list of allegations against Combs, each as disturbing as the last. But her story had its own uniquely horrifying details, painting a picture of an industry where power and privilege were often used as tools of exploitation. To fully understand the gravity of what Graves experienced, we need to go back to a time when Combs, known by many names, including Puff Daddy and Diddy, was at the height of his influence. In the late 90s and early 2000s, Sean Combs was, by all accounts, the king of hip-hop. He had built a sprawling empire with Bad Boy Entertainment, a label that redefined the sound of an entire generation. Artists like the Notorious B.I.G., Faith Evans, and Mays filled the airwaves, dominating the charts. Combs was more than just a businessman. He was a cultural icon, a man who turned everything he touched into gold. From music to fashion to reality TV, Diddy's reach extended far and wide. He was the embodiment of success, someone who had risen from the streets of Harlem to the penthouse suites of Manhattan. But behind the glitz and glamour, behind the carefully curated public image, a much darker narrative was unfolding, one that involved control, power, and, if these lawsuits are to be believed, unspeakable acts of violence. Graves first met Combs through her then-boyfriend, an executive at Bad Boy Entertainment. The boyfriend, who remains unnamed in the lawsuit, was a rising star at the company, and through him, Graves became a familiar face at many of Combs' events. She would attend parties at his homes and often found herself visiting Daddy's House, Combs' infamous recording studio in New York City. Daddy's House was more than just a recording studio. It was a symbol of power, a place where artists came to record hits, where deals were made, and where Combs' influence was felt in every corner. Graves was no stranger to this world. She moved within the industry's inner circles, where excess was the norm and where Combs' larger-than-life personality ruled the room. But as her lawsuit reveals, the relationship between Combs and Graves was far from friendly. What started as an acquaintance based on mutual connections quickly turned into something more dangerous, something that would forever alter the course of her life. In late 2001, Graves received a phone call from Combs. According to the lawsuit, he told her he wanted to discuss her boyfriend's performance at the company, his supposed performance issues, as the lawsuit describes. Graves, wanting to help her partner and believing this to be a professional meeting, agreed. After all, she had known Combs for years by this point. There was no reason to suspect that this meeting would be anything but business. But what Graves couldn't have known was that this meeting was not about her boyfriend at all. In retrospect, she would come to realize that the phone call was nothing more than a pretext, an excuse to lure her into a situation where she would be vulnerable. That evening, Combs arrived at Graves' residence in an SUV. Joseph Big Joe Sherman, Combs' then bodyguard, was behind the wheel. Graves welcomed them inside, and it was there that the evening took its first ominous turn. Combs offered her a glass of wine, a gesture that seemed harmless at the time. But within moments of taking a few sips, Graves began to feel lightheaded. She felt dizzy, disoriented, and physically weak, a sensation she had never experienced before. According to the lawsuit, it became clear in hindsight that Combs had drugged her. Graves had no history of reacting to alcohol this way, and a few sips of wine had never made her feel like this before. As they made their way to Daddy's House recording studio, Graves struggled to maintain her composure. Her legs felt like they might give out beneath her, and by the time they reached Combs' office inside the studio, her body was barely functioning. She would later describe feeling as though she were slipping in and out of consciousness. The lawsuit details what happened next in chilling, graphic detail. Graves says she remembers losing consciousness shortly after they arrived at the studio. When she woke up, she was naked and bound, her hands tied behind her back with what felt like a plastic grocery bag. She tried to scream, to fight, but her body wouldn't cooperate. She was drugged, helpless, and trapped. It was then that Combs allegedly entered the room. He was naked, according to Graves, and as she lay there, powerless to stop what was happening, he proceeded to assault her. Graves recalled being bent over a pool table, her feet dangling above the floor, as Combs violently raped her. She screamed in pain, but her cries were met with indifference. Combs ignored her pleas for mercy, continuing the assault with a brutal disregard for her suffering. When she attempted to escape, he slammed her head into the table, leaving her dazed and unable to fight back. Graves' memory of the assault is punctuated by moments of unconsciousness, as her body and mind struggled to process the horror. When she regained consciousness, she found herself being slapped by Sherman, Combs' bodyguard. Sherman forced her to perform oral sex, further deepening her trauma. It was a violation so complete, so horrifying, that it left her shattered. Hours later, Graves woke up alone on a couch in the studio. She was still naked, her body bruised and in intense pain. She could feel burning sensations in both her vagina and anus, and her face and wrists were marked with bruises from the violent assault. Dizzy, disoriented, and terrified, she managed to call a driver, a man her family knew well. She was still crying uncontrollably when the driver arrived. The driver, noticing her disheveled state and uncontrollable sobbing, urged her to go to the hospital. He begged her to report the rape, to get a rape kit, and to ensure that there was evidence of what had happened. But Graves was paralyzed by fear, fear of what Combs might do to her or to her family if she went to the authorities. Her terror was overwhelming, and she couldn't bring herself to leave the car. Instead, she went home, carrying the weight of what had just happened in silence. The following days were a blur of pain and fear. Graves confided in her boyfriend, telling him about the assault, but instead of offering her support, he discouraged her from going to the police. He was more concerned about the impact it might have on his career at Bad Boy Entertainment than he was about her well-being. The betrayal cut deep. She was left to navigate the trauma alone, with no support and no way to seek justice. For years, Graves tried to move on. She relocated several times, hoping to escape the memories and the ever-present fear that Combs and Sherman would retaliate if she spoke out. But no matter where she went, the trauma followed her. The nightmares, the flashbacks, and the constant anxiety became a part of her daily life. She developed severe PTSD, depression, and anxiety, conditions that still affect her to this day. It wasn't until November 2023, more than two decades after the assault, that Graves learned something that would reignite the horror of that night. Her ex-boyfriend, the one who had discouraged her from going to the police, revealed to her that Combs and Sherman had recorded the assault. Not only had they filmed it, but they had also shown it to others. The assault on her body had been turned into a piece of pornography, shared and sold without her consent. This revelation was the final straw for Graves. She realized she could no longer remain silent. The time had come to hold Combs and Sherman accountable for what they had done. She filed her lawsuit, not just against Combs and Sherman, but against eight of Combs's companies, invoking the New York City Gender-Motivated Violence Protection Act and citing the secret recording and distribution of the sex tape. Graves' lawsuit is just one of many. Since November 2023, a cascade of allegations against Sean Diddy Combs has emerged, each story echoing the same themes of power, control, and sexual violence. Women from different periods of Combs' life, spanning decades, have come forward with disturbing claims of abuse. Each of these allegations has its own harrowing details, but together they form a pattern that has forced the world to reconsider the legacy of one of the music industry's most iconic figures. One of the first lawsuits to make waves came from Cassandra Cassie Ventura, a former girlfriend of Combs, who filed a sex trafficking and sexual abuse lawsuit against him in November 2023. Her 35-page complaint was graphic, detailing years of alleged abuse and manipulation. The lawsuit didn't just shock the public, it also seemed to open the floodgates for other survivors to step forward, inspired by Ventura's courage. In Graves' case, it was Ventura's lawsuit that finally gave her the strength to take legal action. Though Ventura's lawsuit was settled within 24 hours for an undisclosed sum, the impact was already felt. The veil was lifted, and a growing number of women began to share their own stories. Thanksgiving 2023 marked a significant moment in this unraveling story. As the New York Adult Survivors Act was set to expire, two more women filed lawsuits against Combs with similarly disturbing claims. Joy Dickerson Neal alleged that Combs drugged and sexually assaulted her while she was a student at Syracuse University in 1991. According to Dickerson Neal, Combs had filmed the assault and shown the video to others, a claim hauntingly similar to Graves' allegations. The parallels between these cases pointed to a disturbing pattern of behavior, one that involved not just sexual assault, but also the non-consensual recording and distribution of intimate acts. Later that same day, another lawsuit was filed, this time by Liza Gardner, who accused Combs and singer-songwriter Aaron Hall of raping her following an MCA Records event in 1990. Gardner, who was 16 years old at the time, described how the attack left her traumatized and terrified. She also recalled a confrontation the day after the assault in which Combs allegedly became irate, assaulting and choking her until she nearly passed out. The sheer volume of these allegations was staggering. But while Combs and his legal team vehemently denied the claims, calling them fabricated and dismissing them as money grabs, the stories kept coming. In early December 2023, a fourth accuser came forward with yet another shocking account. This woman, whose name was not made public, alleged that Combs, along with two other men, including former Bad Boy president Harve Pierre, had gang-raped her at the same Daddy's House studio in 2003. She was 17 years old at the time, and like the others, she claimed that the assault was filmed and shown to others. The lawsuits didn't stop there. As the months went on, more women shared their stories, each one adding to the growing chorus of voices calling for justice. In February 2024, Rodney Lil Rod Jones, a former associate of Combs, filed his own lawsuit, accusing Combs of sexual assault, harassment, and failing to pay him for his work on Combs' Grammy-nominated album, The Love Album. According to Jones, Combs had abused his position of power to exploit him both sexually and professionally. By March 2024, the weight of these allegations had reached a tipping point. Federal agents raided Combs' homes in Los Angeles and Miami Beach, searching for evidence in connection to the various lawsuits. The raids were a clear signal that law enforcement was taking the claims seriously, and they seemed to embolden even more survivors to step forward. Model Crystal McKinney was among those who filed a lawsuit in the wake of the federal raids. In her complaint, filed in May 2024, McKinney described how she had been assaulted by Combs after attending a Sean John fashion show in 2003. According to McKinney, Combs had pressured her into taking a hit from a laced joint before leading her into a bathroom and forcing her to perform oral sex. McKinney's story, like the others, painted a picture of a man who used drugs, manipulation, and violence to control and exploit women. Then, just a few days after McKinney's lawsuit was filed, April Lampros came forward with her own harrowing tale. Lampros, a former intern at Arista Records, described how her relationship with Combs had turned abusive over the course of several years. She claimed that he had sexually assaulted her on three separate occasions during their four-year relationship, and that in 1997, he recorded a sex tape of her without her consent and showed it to multiple people. The violation didn't end with the initial recording. According to Lampros, Combs continued to use the footage as a means of control, threatening her with its release if she ever spoke out. The allegations against Combs weren't just coming from those who had once been close to him. Former employees and associates were also stepping forward with their own stories of abuse and exploitation. In early June 2024, former Danity Kane and Diddy Dirty Money member Don Richard filed a lawsuit accusing Combs of sexual harassment and assault. Richard's lawsuit described how Combs had used coercive threats and displays of brutal violence to force her into commercial sex acts, adding yet another layer to the already complex web of allegations. Each of these stories, on its own, would be deeply disturbing. But taken together, they formed a portrait of a man who allegedly wielded his power and influence with reckless disregard for the lives of the women around him. For Thalia Graves, knowing that she was not alone in her experiences provided some comfort, but it also underscored just how deep and far-reaching Combs's alleged abuse had been. Graves' own journey to justice, however, is far from over. Her lawsuit is still working its way through the courts, and she knows that the road ahead will be long and difficult. But for the first time in over two decades, she feels a sense of agency, a sense that she can reclaim her life and her voice after years of silence and fear. Her story is now out in the open, and the power dynamics that once shielded men like Sean Combs from accountability are beginning to crumble. The lawsuits filed under New York's Adult Survivors Act, like those of Graves and the other women, reflect a broader cultural shift, one that challenges the long-held notion that powerful men are untouchable. The act, which temporarily lifted the statute of limitations for survivors of sexual violence to file civil lawsuits, allowed many of these women to come forward after years of being silenced by fear, shame, or threats. For Graves, the fear of retribution from Combs and Sherman still lingers, even after all this time. The lawsuit outlines how she was repeatedly threatened in the years following the assault, with both men warning her to stay silent. But the tides are changing, and the collective power of these survivors is forcing a reckoning. The impact of these lawsuits is already being felt far beyond the courtroom. The public is beginning to reconsider not just Sean Combs, but the entire system that enabled him to operate unchecked for so long. The music industry, like so many other industries, has long been plagued by stories of exploitation and abuse, with powerful figures like Combs at the center of those stories. But as more survivors come forward, the ability of these men to hide behind their wealth, fame, and connections is fading. Graves knows that no legal settlement or court ruling can undo the trauma she has endured. The PTSD, depression, and anxiety that have plagued her for years are not things that will simply disappear. But by speaking out, by filing this lawsuit, she is taking the first steps toward healing, steps she never thought possible during those dark days after the assault. Her journey is not just about seeking justice for herself. It's about shining a light on the dark corners of an industry that has long protected abusers. It's about showing other survivors that they, too, can speak up and fight back, no matter how powerful their abuser may be. As the cases against Sean Diddy Combs continue to unfold, the world will be watching. The question now is not just about whether Combs will be held accountable for these alleged crimes, but about whether the systems that allowed him to operate with impunity will finally be dismantled. For Thalia Graves, and for the many women who have come forward with their stories, this is about more than just one man. It's about changing the way we understand power, control, and accountability. It's about ensuring that no other woman has to endure the kind of horror that they have experienced. The road to justice is long, but for Graves, taking that first step is what matters most.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, How to Best Kill Somebody with a Knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.